Welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, RFERL's Monday podcast about significant developments and upcoming events in Moscow and beyond. I'm Steve Gutterman, and my guest this week is RFERL Moscow correspondent Matthew Luxmore. Welcome, Matthew. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me on, Steve.
All right. Once again, I'd like to focus on the coronavirus and to take advantage of having Matthew on the line from Moscow to get a fresh assessment of the situation from there. Now, one issue that is persistently prominent is the question or questions about the official numbers in Russia, the number of cases and the number of deaths, and whether they reflect the real situation. Russia now has recorded the third highest total number of COVID-19 infections after the United States and Brazil, which where the numbers have risen quite fast lately. But there's evidence that the actual numbers in Russia could be substantially higher, and the rate of deaths to coronavirus cases is much lower than in many other countries. And Matthew, you've done quite a bit of reporting on this. Last week, you obtained the results of a survey of medical professionals, first reported by Medusa, in which more than 35% of the respondents said they essentially had been told to pass off deaths resulting from pneumonia caused by the coronavirus disease as deaths not caused by COVID-19. At least that's how I understood it. Is that correct? And what does it say about the situation in Russia, where the number of new cases reported daily has been below the peak for, I think, a week or so now?
I think, as you mentioned, if you look at the global coronavirus tables, if you want to call it that, the country comparison tables, Russia still definitely stands out very clearly as a country with a far lower death rate or mortality rate compared to the amount of infections that have been recorded. And so this definitely continues to be a very big source of discussion in Russia and abroad concerning the situation in the world's largest country. But in recent days and weeks, more and more evidence has been mounting of what many now quite confidently describe as a campaign to suppress essentially Russia's recorded death toll, which is done most directly through the way the deaths are recorded. So various Russian officials have confirmed recently that Russia does not add to its official tally the deaths of patients who are tested positive for COVID-19 but had other accompanying illnesses, as you mentioned. So that's obviously not a crime. It's one of many approaches to recording nationwide mortality rates. It's at odds with Western countries, but it's not necessarily illegal. But the side effect of this method, and probably the intended effect too, is to produce a mortality rate from COVID-19 that's far lower than that of other countries that have been hit hard by the virus. So the evidence that's emerged recently suggests that this isn't just the chosen method in Russia, but it's also part of a practice aimed at keeping the mortality low and avoiding panic in the population and, you know, the consequences for those who are alleged to have sown it. I mean, you know, officials in the regions. So on Friday, as you mentioned, RFERL obtained the results of a survey of 509 Russian doctors who have treated COVID-positive patients. It's part of a survey of around 4,000 doctors across the country, but only 509 of whom actually were working directly with COVID patients. And of those doctors, more than a third, I think it's 35.8%, said they had received instructions from their superiors to doctor figures on infections and deaths in their hospitals. Mm-hmm. Elsewhere, several doctors interviewed by Proyekt, which is a Russian investigative outlet, said the same. So actually, to quote one of them, I'm looking at the article now, we're simply not allowed to list COVID as a cause. This is a Russian doctor in the provinces. So I think, you know, to sum up, part of the reason is part of the reason for that is that in Russia, listing COVID-19 as a patient's diagnosis or their ultimate cause of death means more work, more paperwork, more bureaucracy, and ultimately more questions to answer from your superiors or local government officials. And as a result, many of those officials and some doctors too, I think, simply prefer to avoid the hassle. And part of the mandate of regional governors, of course, regional governors in Russia who are appointed by Moscow, is to keep the deaths and infections low. So ultimately, you know, a system essentially emerges where that's the overriding incentive, and that may be the main kind of set of causes that's leading to this suppressed, or you know, to a death toll that's you know, alleged to have been suppressed to keep the numbers down.
Right. It's a very helpful explanation. It sounds like it's sort of a mix of, you know, the official, as you say, the official way, I guess, of counting is different from in many Western countries. But then also you have pressure on the doctors and kind of a fudging of the figures as they come out, you know, I guess even with the different method of counting. So and as you say, I guess, in a way, the as many things kind of aimed both at Russians and the world, you know, to make sure or try to ensure that there's no panic, and then also, you know, to try to, I guess, tell Russians and the rest of the world, you know, when this is all over, that, you know, well, look, we had a better result. All right. I mean, that's quite interesting. Now, I guess another, as this COVID has progressed in Russia, several senior officials or aides to President Vladimir Putin have contracted the coronavirus disease, including Prime Minister Mikhail Mishustin, who has been released from the hospital, I think, last week or a little over that, and Putin's spokesman Dmitry Peskov, who at least late last week, I believe, remained hospitalized, although his wife had been released. And also late last week, now the Kremlin-backed leader of Chechnya, Ramzan Kadyrov, was reportedly flown to Moscow with a suspected coronavirus infection. Now, it's unclear what is actually going on with Kadyrov. The news of his hospitalization was first reported by the Telegram channel Baza, just stated as fact without any source, as that channel tends to do. And then state-run TASS and other Russian media outlets cited unnamed medical sources as saying essentially the same thing, that Kadyrov was flown to Moscow and was hospitalized and was believed to have the coronavirus. Baza later reported that Kadyrov was in grave condition, but at least two senior figures in Chechnya have denied that he's ill and denied that he's in Moscow. And now, I believe today, I haven't really checked, but it looks like Kadyrov or Kadyrov's Instagram account has a new post with a photo of him smelling some flowers in an outdoor situation and saying he needs to be alone and the best treatment is being alone, but not saying he has the coronavirus at all. Just giving some unclear words about his state of emotions and his state of being. So, Matthew, I'm not going to ask you to tell me what is going on. I think that's, you know, very hard to know. But what I guess I'll ask is this. Putin has relied on Kadyrov to keep things under what I guess the Kremlin considers control in Chechnya for about 15 years, since a few years after the second war between federal forces and their armed opponents in Chechnya ended, but gave rise to or gave way to an Islamist insurgency. Let's say Kadyrov is hospitalized with COVID-19 and makes a recovery. Do you think that would affect his future as a head of Chechnya in terms of his own power and the Kremlin's view of him or Putin's view of him?
Yeah, that's an interesting way of positing the question. I mean, I think if he was to recover, you know, we've already had very scant information on what's going on, and I assume that there'd be little information going forward if he managed to almost unnoticed be transferred to Moscow in his private plane. I assume he could probably get back the same way. So I'm not quite sure how much information we'd get on it. But, I mean, as you say, we've had a couple of Instagram posts, you know, featuring him smelling flowers. I think there's another one posted by a spokesman of him, you know, hugging some animals. So I think if it's true that he's in Moscow in grave condition, as Baza says, they've been right in the past. They've been wrong on other occasions, but journalists definitely tend to rely on them sometimes, at least as far as rumors go. But I think if he is hospitalized, then this is obviously going to shake up the reason. I mean, the reason this is such a closely watched story is obviously not only Tidiro's personality, you know, his frequent threats against journalists who report unfavorably on his repressive rule or his promises to beat quarantine violators in Chechnya, but it's also, you know, his status as Putin's man in Chechnya, as you mentioned, a region that's experienced two wars in recent memory and has been kept relatively stable only because of Putin's special arrangement with Kadyrov, which essentially is based on him, Kadyrov, being given free rein to manage the republic in exchange for snuffing out, you know, the slightest signs of upheaval and keeping things calm there. In light of all the recent rumors, and as far as we know what's going on, some people have gone as far as to say that, you know, Kadyrov is really a pillar of Putin's centralized system of rule in Russia, and that if he goes, you know, whether by coronavirus or, you know, by some kind of internal, elite dissatisfaction or whatever happens in the future, you know, Chechnya separatist movement could again become active and Russia's territorial integrity could be threatened. There are others who, you know, dismiss that kind of analysis and say essentially that Moscow's deal with Chechnya is based on subsidies from the center that are then distributed among Kadyrov and his cronies in Chechnya, which means essentially that even if Kadyrov goes, someone else who's willing to embrace those same terms could essentially fulfill the same role. So I think it's hard to tell at this stage. I think it's definitely a story worth following. It definitely seems to be the main story that's kind of fueling Russia's rumor mill right now. But I think if Kadyrov was to go, there would definitely be at least an extended period of political instability in Chechnya that may fairly smoothly transition towards a new arrangement with someone else, but it kind of depends on which of those critics are right in the end, right?
Absolutely. I think you really laid out everything quite well there, and it's very complicated and really unpredictable. But I think, as you say, kind of there are at least two opinions. You know, one which says that essentially, it is the subsidies that keep Chechnya under control. Kadyrov is the person who is channeling those subsidies from Moscow into Chechnya, and that if he needs to be replaced, then the trick would be to do so in a way that the people in his place will be reliant on the subsidies and everything would go smoothly. And I think, I mean, one other thing to mention is the idea that, you know, Kadyrov is almost a symbol of Putin's rule. He's been in power in Chechnya for a long time, was initially appointed by Putin. And I think, I mean, I'm not saying it would have a huge nationwide effect, but I think like the search for someone new in Chechnya, you know, would certainly get people thinking around Russia and create kind of an additional feeling of uncertainty maybe in this what people always refer to as these uncertain times. So we'll have to watch the tea leaves or coffee grounds, as it were, and see what whether some real information comes out in the next few days. Okay, I think we'll wrap it up for today. Matthew, thanks again for joining us from Moscow.
Sure, thanks, Steve. Always a pleasure.
All right, I'll be back next Monday for another Week Ahead in Russia. Meanwhile, please keep an eye out on Friday for The Week in Russia, my newsletter about recent events. Thanks for listening.